Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast, a show where we bring you the best clips from all of our subscription Red Men Plus content from the last week or so. And honestly, we've had so much content out over the last week because Liverpool continue to play footy games. There's always news happening in and around the Reds. If you want to get any of these shows in full, in fact, all of these shows in full, simply head on over to redmenplus.com. And we've got a very special offer on for you in honour of Darwin Núñez's late winner against Nottingham Forest last weekend, where he scored in the 99th minute. We've got an offer where you can get Red Men Plus for just 99p for the first month. Just go to redmenplus.com, sign up as a monthly captain subscriber. If you enter the promo code Núñez when you do that, yeah, you'll get your first month for 99p, and you'll get to listen or watch to all of these shows, starting with the Biased Football Podcast. Yes, it was Paul, it was Chloe, and it was me as well. Yet the show where we get to look at everyone else other than Liverpool for just an hour or so each week. We're very Liverpool themed, of course, but every now and then we look outside the Liverpool bubble. So yeah, check out this clip from the Biased Football Podcast.
Just the segues towards Manchester United, obviously. Rashford scores an absolutely amazing goal. Absolutely amazing. It's as good a goal as you'll see in a derby game, in the Premier League. Hell of a strike. It gives them that little bit of optimism or whatever. But United are rubbish.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, they're crap.
The mentality is the problem. Like, it's a derby game and you're just fine with Manchester City having the ball. You don't want to put one, like, in that game. And look, Roy Keane does my head in sometimes, but I swear to God, if you were that passive against a game and Roy Keane was playing it, he'd just go and snap someone in half. Yeah. And, like, you know, you could at least see the frustration or something there. And it was like Manchester United showed up and they already knew they were beat. They were scared to play. It was like the ball at times was a bomb and no one wanted it. It was, get that away from
it's
me
bizarre,
instantly.
Isn't it, Nicole? Because like when we watched Chelsea draw with them a few weeks ago, that's half of the blueprint, really. And that's different. They did defend, but they showed they were comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Conor Gallagher and Enzo would take touches and then get it wide and look to counter. United's plan was to just boot it back to City every single time and then ask Marcus Rashford, who after he scored looked like he couldn't be arsed anymore, to do nothing. It was a very odd plan. Like, if your game plan is to go one up against City and then be that passive, you're going to lose. They're too good.
Yeah.
The players are too good. You can defend deep, but you have to offer something. And to be fair, United, there was a couple of times on the break where, you know, Rashford and Garnacho maybe, you know, have chances. But the second half performance was as tepid as you'll ever see. Like, the gulf between those two teams at the moment is massive. And it's obviously different for us, Paul. It's a bit different for Chloe because Chloe's probably known for a long time as Man United being crap. But like, we've known Man United as that doesn't happen. Like, Manchester United away from home in a derby to just be roll over and get your belly tickled. It just doesn't happen.
Their game plan, because it basically, yes, there's a bit of the Chelsea blueprint, but there's also what they did at Anfield as well, where he's going. It's decisions made out of fear.
Yeah,
it's decisions that go, I'm losing my job here. If we get absolutely snotted here, that's me done. So I'm going to get them to buy into this idea of whatever. It's defend resolution. It's Manchester United. Like, not to go full Roy Keane right now again. Yeah. You know, this is Manchester United.
A £1 billion squad.
Well, yeah, and even if you take away what they've actually spent. And look, I'll make some caveats for, you know, Hoyland had just hit some good form and he's out, so they haven't got a guy to lead the line as much anymore. Yeah, but I mean, my God, like I've got the attack momentum chart up here from SofaScore for the game, and I'll just describe for that to describe it for audio listeners.
New York City is Manchester City.
Yeah, basically, Manchester City is a skyline, and Manchester United are like it's on a flat river underneath.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just there's nothing happening underneath the surface there. Man United is basically tantamount to nothing all game long, and in fact, their goal doesn't even come after a period of Manchester United pressure or anything. It is a long hump down the field that works out in their favour, and it's a one in a, I think they worked out it's like a one in 30.
Yeah.
In and they said it in average football terms, it's a one in 30 goal. It's not, that's a, you know, it's a ball from the blue. And I just watched it just going, this is mad, because it's not, to me, saying Man United are rubbish is not a new thing. This isn't just happening, it wasn't this game, it's not just this season. It's mad to just sort of sit here, and the Times caught up with me a bit. You know, it's a bit like, you know, you've had a lot of, you grow your hair, sorry, Steve, and you one day look at it and go, what have you done here? Like, you mean, you've let your hair grow, you're like, what, how the hell have you let this happen, you idiot? Right, go and get that sold. Man United's a bit like this, it's just this overgrown mess, and I can't fathom quite how they've got there, because in my mind, they should be better than this, and they're a huge football club with a huge following, with a huge amount of money available to them to do this, and they had a team there that had, they just weren't capable of offering anything remotely like a stylistic brand of football against their City rivals, who have, in that time where they've been crap, they've utterly dominated.
But it's also mad, because in the first 30 minutes, and bear in mind, right, you could tell the frustration was happening. The Etihad was silent as ever. But the point was everything was frustrating. Like, I think Man United's defenders can actually walk off the pitch and say, lads, I was brilliant, because the blocks in the first half was absolutely sensational from them, and there was big chances that Manchester City missed, and you could tell the frustration, and you could tell it was getting to Pep Guardiola, because after everything crap that they did, like a loose ball here or there, Pep Guardiola was clapping it and telling the fans, clap it, get on our side. Yeah. He's not that animated. He'd just sit there and let it happen, because that's what he knows his team's incredible. He knows he'll eventually go over the line. But it was frustrating, Manchester City. And the thing is first 30, Rashford scores that unbelievable goal. He's then in. And I don't know where he heads it. I don't know what head shape he's got, but it's not normal, because it goes in the complete opposite. Just nod it straight in front of you. You're in.
Yeah.
No one's catching you. Kyle Walker, even with his pace at this moment, because you've got that extra yard, is either going to have to fire you, or you've got a one-on-one. And look, Edison's a brilliant goalkeeper, but still, you've got the one-on-one. And then the second one is, I think Bruno Fernandes tries to find Scott McTominay, but it misses him and goes one over. And if Rashford just makes a connection instead of kicking the thin air, you know, he gets it on target. That could be another goal. And these were signs where you were like, how is this even working? Like, they're just lobbing a ball up, but it's working. And in the second half, it was the fear of actually getting a chance like that. It was, no, I've got to put 11 men behind, and we've just got to sit this out. And you can't do that against Manchester City.
I think your point, Freddie Paul, is the one. He was happy getting beat by a couple.
Yeah.
Because seven, this time last year, ironically, Liverpool beat Man United by seven. Another one of them loses him his job. Nobody's going to sack him for losing 3-1 at Man City, because anyone can lose 3-1 at Man City. He's not gone there to try and win points. He's gone there to save his job.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing it all, sit back here. And then even the subs that he makes are defensive subs. You know, they've just, I was like, what are you doing? Like, I know Garnacho's a bit crap. Like,
he is crap.
Amrabat and then this bizarre.
Well, but Amrabat, I'd forgotten he even played for them.
Yeah. He's a fucking crap as well. He's
terrible. Like, and there's a reason why in a year, in two transfer windows where the demand for defensive midfielders went through the roof, where
anyone
and the price went up through the roof, you could have got him for 15 million to 20 million quid, and no one took it, to the point where United were able to get him on loan. That's how little Fiorentina wanted to keep him about.
He's shite, him. And Casemiro as well, like he's
stuck in mud, that
lad. But this is the problem with them,
stuck in kebabs.
We said this when
mate, that run when Foden runs off him, right, and like Phil Foden's sensational, don't get me wrong, he is, but like Casemiro, I was like, wait, you can't turn around, he turns like a bin wagon. I was like, wait, but he went beep 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 beep. I was like, what is that? Like, his fall off is like Fabinho last year, where it's like he's gone from it must be some like Brazilian DMs or something in the Premier League, but like he's gone, he was a good, his first
not
year was
Brazilian
good.
Footballers, it's funny this because there's lots of Brazilian footballers who haven't got great longevity. No, yeah. they carry on, but they don't do it at the top level of the game. There's a reason why they go back to Brazil and then they play for another like 5 or 6 years because it's just not the, it's not the same anymore in European football, and because they just live a different, they live a mad lifestyle. Yeah, loads was, I don't know whether Casemiro was that, but what I was going to say at Anfield, and what I said post match in the game at Anfield with them was, if you park the bus, any team parks the bus, it's difficult to play against them, it's difficult to score. If you park the bus with Rafael Varane at centre half, and if you can do it, if you can manage to have Casemiro on the pitch as well as a bonus and that, and look, Onana's a bit of a clown, but he's a good goalie. If you do that with good players, then you're going to have a better chance of drawing football matches. But when it then comes undone, you just look stupid. And again, everything, it just exposes everything they're doing. And like, I mean, like Scott McTominay, for all the will in the world, is an average footballer at best. But, you know, they've, how he's come to that squad, and if the problem is ultimately is he's spent big money on
all his
couple of players, players, like and for what and for why, it's insane.
Hoyland's been decent, but
just lately, just
recently come into his own. But like, you go through Esther, the goalie's rubbish.
Anthony.
I mean, Anthony is he the flop of all flops in Premier League history?
He's up there with Nicolas Pepe.
He's an absolute clown. I mean, £100 million sign and can't even get on the pitch in a derby game is bad. And then he comes on, and I mean, you can see why he wasn't on the pitch, because he's fucking crap. Like, it's baffling. Like, they got a little bit unlucky, of course, with Mason Mount. He's injured, and that's hard lines. That's hard lines. But their recruitment and their squad building, how do you end up in a Manchester derby with Johnny Evans on your pitch?
Like, to be fair, he was possibly there.
And he was good. He was, and I get it. But like, they were trying to bin Maguire off, and then he comes back. Like, they think there's just no joined up thinking, and if I was a United fan, and if the game plan was, we'll do what we did at Anfield, that's a one in a million. They should never have got the points at Anfield. Liverpool's poor finishing on the day was the reason they got battered at Anfield. Like, they had 20 odd shots conceded. I know Jamie Carragher mentioned it on his show, and Josh Williams tweeted it. Like, it's so easy to get shots off of Man United.
Yeah,
so easy. Even the other day when they were literally parked the team bus on the edge. I mean, how many times were City in?
Well, they did this win percentage is like 60 or 61%, which is actually not a bad win percentage, but they faced more than 20 shots in a game, more than any other team by an absolute mile.
Then
as
Sheffield,
well,
Sheffield United right down the bottom, and Sheffield United at the bottom of the league. It's a very strange way to try and get the fans on
side. Because you used to have like managers, like Mourinho's a good example of this. You would organise a team, super defensive, but then what you've got then is you've got a solid base, and then you just let your good lads do the good lad things, and they'll win games of football for you. United almost feel a bit like the inverse of that. It's like, it's actually the reason why they're not utterly dreadful is because they've got a couple of good people. They've got a half decent goalie, and they've got a good centre half, and they've got a decent DM, and they're like somehow just about managing to stop it being an absolute disaster. They're just clinging on for dear life. It's wild. And look, I'll take injuries into consideration. Yeah, Hoyland's their main goal threat when you lose that. But again, why have you not got someone else? Mm. You know, okay, Liverpool without Fernando Torres were never the same football team, but you had David and go, and at least functionally he'd do some similar things. The issue they've got is Marcus Rashford. They bow to him too much, and he should be the next great English centre forward. He should have been getting groomed to take that role as a number nine, but he decided it wasn't really what he wanted to do, and so because he's been allowed to basically run his own career for years now, and then you're left with a game where effectively they have Bruno Fernandes and Scott McTominay, you know, rotating in the attacking positions while Rashford is ploughing this lonely furrow with all the pace on the wing. Garnacho's a decent player, you know, he'll have a decent career, I think, but they've spent the money's on the pitch.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and they're still fucking rubbish.
Nice one to Paul for that one. I'll be honest, I think this is going to be a very me-heavy show. I've realised that I'm on a lot of these shows that we're going to bring you clips from. But this one I wasn't on. It was Expert Insight with Dan Clubb and Dave Powell. Dave, who of course works for the Liverpool Echo, football finance expert, spoke to Dan about FSG releasing Liverpool's latest accounts yet. What's the financial situation of the Reds? What's the new stand impact? All that kind of good stuff. So yeah, check out what Dan and Dave had to say.
I want to touch on the FSG reshuffle a little bit as well, because you've been right across this in recent times. And as I mentioned earlier on, it's water all these days in football circles. Like, we want to know everything that's going on behind the scenes and beyond. Certainly a lot of people do, myself included. Billy Hogan, it seems to have a bit of a shift in role as well. And I think the publicisation of Liverpool's pursuit of Michael Edwards is playing a really interesting part in all this as well. So we'll come on to that in a moment. But just explain, if you can, sort of what's going on at FSG. Because I think Theo Epstein took a role recently as well. There's moving parts, it feels like. Not necessarily always related to Liverpool, but there's definitely moving parts within that organisation.
Well, it's a company which always has to try and plan for what's next, because the two men at the top are in their mid-70s. So it's about adding energy and new ideas at the top level. Now, there's a tendency, I think, to think about this Billy Hogan shift as kind of mirroring what happened with Mike Gordon towards the end, when he kind of stepped away from his involvement with Liverpool day-to-day. That was seen as being a start of kind of the uncertainty and the lack of strategy maybe during that period of last season. In reality, I think it's, for the time being, I think it's largely title. It was said in the, so they have this partners meeting every single year, and they've kind of rewarded long service and doing a good job and success with these two new roles. Sam Kennedy remains CEO and president of the Boston Red Sox, while Billy Hogan remains CEO of Liverpool. And people in Boston told me that it was, nothing changes in terms of his day-to-day. Now, it might be hard to believe that, because how can you not have more time pressures? But in reality, you know, the time pressures, there is a huge army of people that work at Liverpool on the day-to-day, you know, function of the football club. It's the key decisions and strategic direction which kind of falls on the shoulders of the CEO. Now, Billy Hogan's been named CEO of FSG International. Now, it doesn't take long to look through FSG's international portfolio to realise it only consists of Liverpool. So, you know, that maybe it's a kind of precursor to them acquiring more European, I'm not going to say football clubs, but IP, so intellectual property. So I think that's the way. I can't see more football clubs in FSG's future. I just can't. So not in Europe. I think they find the challenges of it at the moment. And it's also not a great time to buy. I mean, prices are high. Everyone's trying to figure out and monetize these clubs. And they already own one of the greatest assets in world football. So unless they're going to find synergies with Liverpool, I can't see it. But Hogan's role will just be, I think, sitting in and advising on more strategic decisions which are outside of Liverpool as well. So potentially things where they look at acquisitions of other property. I'm trying to find synergies across the management which exists in Pittsburgh and Boston and things like that. And they also got, they needed a change, or kind of a reshuffle, because they had to, so Sam Kennedy's probably going to have a more of a say on this PGA Tour investment, the strategic sports investment they did, which FSG led on. Billy Hogan might have some thoughts about that. But from what I can gather, it's going to be a case of he's still Liverpool CEO for the long term, and they don't really envision that changing, just as Sam Kennedy's role hasn't changed. And I know the Michael Edwards thing becomes really interesting to people as this what they're priming him for? I mean, this is personal point of view mixed with some conversations I've had, but I just don't see Michael Edwards coming back to Liverpool purely because I think he is on a different journey. It depends what they can offer him. So Theo Epstein left FSG in 2011 to go to the Chicago Cubs for a different role, different challenge. Then he moved into private equity to become an advisor for Arctos. Now, Theo Epstein was effectively the man that John Henry turned to when he couldn't get Billy Beane in 2003. That's seen in Moneyball and the film where kind of they sit down and John Henry's character's trying to do a deal with Billy Beane, and it doesn't happen. So they turned to Theo Epstein, who turned out to be an absolute golden boy. And in order to get him back, they've given him equity in the company. So now he's a minority stakeholder in FSG and its entire portfolio. Now, I don't know what Michael Edwards wants to do with his future, whether he becomes to be just become rich, or whether he wants to build something from the ground up. So he's involved in Ludonautics with Ian Graham, this data analytics firm which they set up last year, which is advising certain football clubs. I think Bolton Wanderers is one of them. but obviously they've got big plans for that. And maybe having ownership of his day-to-day and working in different environments, not just Liverpool, is what appeals. But I think I just don't find it all meshing together unless they offer a real carrot of, I don't know, maybe equity or a real plum role. But I don't think he's becoming CEO of the football club or anything like that. So that remains Billy Hogan's role. But that's my 2 pence worth on that.
Cheers to the guys for that one. Next up, yes, it's me. I'm on this one as well. It's Jano Inside Time. It's me and Neil Jones. And one of our Discord users sent in a very, very, very good question asking who of Liverpool's best player been this season. Who's been the Reds' best player so far in the campaign? So yeah, check out what me and Neil had to say about that. If Neil had to pick a Liverpool player of the year today, who would it be and why? So before we make decisions, Neil, we can run through a couple of contenders and then maybe think of one. I mean, we might as well start with the fellow who lifted the trophy the other day. I'm guessing he's pretty high up on this list.
Virgil, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll tell you who my player of the year is, and I'll tell you who was in the running. So he is, Virgil is the player I would pick as player of the year today. Who would it be and why? Virgil van Dijk, because I think he has the greatest impact on Liverpool's overall sense of well-being. So I think when he's at his best, I think Liverpool are a few inches taller and have their chest pushed out a bit further. And let's not forget, he had some questions to answer, didn't he? You know, he's mentioned it a few times.
Said himself on the video.
You saw that. And listen, cool as you like, but that shows you, doesn't it, that even the coolest customers, they hear what's being said. He's made reference to it a few times in the mix zone. I think he made reference to it live on Sky. I can't remember what game it was, but he sort of said, when Carra was around, and he said, you know, yeah, there's noise. People have been making a lot of noise about my form and it wasn't as bad as people made out and all that. So clearly it has affected them or got through to him. So to come back in the manner that he has, and I know, you know, he had the red card up at Newcastle and big learning curve for him. You know, I think you've seen the impact since. How many times have you seen Virgil dragging someone away from a referee or saying, like, leave it, you know, let me handle this situation more calmly? And I think his performance levels have been absolutely magnificent. He had one mistake, you know, him and Alisson down at Arsenal. It can happen. You get one of those in a season. Unfortunately, it came in a big game at a big time. But cancel that out with however many. I mean, you know, opening goal against Sheffield United, potentially a sticky away fixture. Opening goal or the equalising goal against Luton, goal in the final. You know, big, big performances, but defensively as well. Back to his very best. The amount of times I've seen him cutting out low crosses, winning big headers in his penalty area. The header back to his goalkeeper on Saturday, was that the last minute of the first half?
That's outrageous.
That was one of them where, as the ball's coming in, you're thinking, oh, that's a problem. And then you see, he's not, oh my God, that is, you know, like that. But that just shows you just sort of where he's at in terms of his form levels. You know, he's just in control of situations. And I feel like when he's in control of situations, Liverpool are just a far better side and a far more dangerous proposition. And I feel like the supporters have got that sense that we're not gonna do stupid things today. We're not gonna concede 2-3 goals today. We're gonna be tight and solid, and then we're gonna see if we've got the quality to win it. So I think the impact that Van Dijk has on the whole well-being, like I say, of the team and the supporters is the biggest. So, and he's played most of the season as well, hasn't he? You know, he's barely missed a game. So he's my player of the year. Contenders. So behind that, I would have a top five that would have Darwin in there.
More appearances, well, joint most appearances.
Yeah, and the most goals and assists. I'm not having Salah in there, although he's had amazing moments and spells in the game. I think Darwin, in terms of in-game impact on it, I think it's greater. I think the way he gets Liverpool attacking, direct, sort of threatening most of the time. You know, he had a little lean spell around sort of November, December, didn't he, where he didn't score for, I think, a dozen games. But I never, ever feel like you come off the pitch and go, where was Darwin today? Like, you know, anonymous, really. There are only a couple of games I can think of this season. Big moments, like I say, Newcastle, obviously the weekend. But other ones where he's just carried Liverpool's threat a lot of times and sort of almost set their stall out of this is what we're going to do. We're going to attack you. We're going to go right at you from the word go. So I'd have Darwin, and I think he's made real good progress this season, given the fact that, you know, I keep going back to that Newcastle game, but the reason he's able to do that is he wasn't in Liverpool's best attack at the start of the season. You know, at the start of the season, I think with Diaz, Jota and Salah with Gakpo midfield, and Darwin now is on, you know, if he's fit, he's in Liverpool's best attack, isn't he? 100%. Joe Gomez would be in that top five. I think
37 appearances.
37
in
appearances.
About seven different roles.
So many different roles, but good as well. Not a case, no, not just a case of he's filling a gap at left back, or he's filling a gap, whatever. He's done well as well. He put good performances in. And I think against expectations at the start of the season, what you've seen from Joe Gomez, you know, I think some people might have thought, is he past this sort of his sell-by day for Liverpool? You know, in terms of he hasn't played a lot at centre-back. He's had some poor games when he has played at centre-back. You know, last season at Napoli, we had Real Madrid, we had Southampton. A lot of goals conceded. I think to come back there says a lot about his character, but also what a good footballer he is as well. You know, to be able to play in essentially four positions. You know, I know he hasn't, as I say, centre-back's been probably the last of the four of late. To be able to do that, I think says a lot about him. And he hasn't had an injury. You know, in a season of injuries, you would have thought Joe Gomez would be one that would fall down. So fair play to me. He's come back, he's conditioned, and he's been so consistent in his level. So give him a shout-out. And then the other two that I would throw into the mix would be Wataru Endo and Alexis McAllister, as two players that have just been terrific, and both have got better and better as the season's gone on. You know, different types of players, but with very similar kind of, when they're on it, they bring very similar things to the game. I think Endo surprised a lot of people with how good he's been on the ball and how good he is on the ball playing forwards. You know, I think maybe people thought when he saw this 30-year-old sort of holding midfielder, he thought he'd be a very steady Eddie side to side, maybe, you know, just a bit of a breaker upper of play. He's more than that. He progresses the ball really well. He scored a couple of obviously big goals. Well, he's certainly one big goal in terms of the Fulham one. Yeah. And I think it's just his selflessness and team ethic has been massive.
His fitness levels are
ridiculous. Fitness level. I mean, that was an epic performance from in the Carabao Cup final.
Do you remember Momo Sokho 2006 when it was like no one else could run?
Yeah, that was very
reminiscent of that, where like everyone was goosed and Endo was legging it. Yeah, he gets injured going into a tackle in the 119th minute.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, brilliant performance. And again, a little bit against expectations, you know, sort of he was the fullback signing, if you like, wasn't he, of the summer, so I don't think people thought he'd be this. Now, I think he's in Liverpool's best team at this moment in time. I think you've got some awkward conversations to have around, you know, one of Szoboszlai, McAllister and Curtis Jones would miss out if you had Liverpool's best full squad available. So that tells you a lot about him. And McAllister, I just love watching him as a player. I think how often, it was said to me a while back about a good midfield player should always be around the ball. Not necessarily on it, but always around it. And the amount of times you look at McAllister, whether he's closing down a player, making a block, or Liverpool win the ball and he's the first player playing the first pass out because he's read it and he's at the scene of where you need to be. I think he's a brilliant player. I think he's only going to get better. And I think when you looked, I think we all suspected in the summer 35 million was a steal.
Yeah.
I think it's been proven
already.
Amply since. You could have mentioned, I mean, they've all had moments in the season. Trent had an incredible period. Yeah. Konate is in the middle of a brilliant period at this moment. You know, the last few months he's been outstanding. Salah's had amazing moments in the season. Jota's had big impact. Szoboszlai had a great start. There's a lot of contenders, but they'd be my five that I would pick out at this moment in time.
As well, Curtis Jones, fantastic.
Curtis, yeah. Harvey Elliott, you know, different way. You know, he hasn't started as many games, but a big impact on the season.
Give 20 more games to Conor Bradley, he'd be a man. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He hasn't played enough games. He's played 14 games, but what I mean, as 14 games go, he's been faultless. Like he's been up.
Gerald Kwanza, you know, great impact on the first team. Yeah. There's so many, but yeah, I think I'm just looking at, I think Virgil's head and shoulders personally as number one, and then they'd be the four I'd have below him, with several others looking to get in.
That's
there.
That's why you're top of the league and in three exactly. competitions, because so many people have
exactly. And hopefully,
season.
You know, maybe some of the names that I haven't mentioned there: Gakpo, Diaz, Robertson. You know, Kelleher. You know, hopefully their period is now. You know, the end of the season where you come at the end and go, I'll tell you what an impact Diaz made on that running, or you know. What a magnificent Mo Salah getting 15 goals in his last 15 games or whatever. You know, it's not beyond the realms, is it? So yeah, there's still time as well for others to really have their moments in the season. I think Diaz is in good form at the moment. You know, I hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jota was the one I was thinking. I think he'd have cracked my top five somewhere. He's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, Virgil van Dijk, he might win the Premier League Player of the Year again. If you know, at this moment in time, he's in the mix for that. So. Pep, say Phil Foden, fantastic. You know, Declan Rice is getting a lot of plaudits as well, and a few others. But yeah, obviously Haaland's goals and stuff like that. But it feels like Van Dijk's probably the only Liverpool player who's probably in that mix to win that one. You would say,
and then obviously you might have a few in the young player of the year section. But yeah, he's done it before. You know, second in the Ballon d'Or. But Virgil Van Dijk, he's won obviously everything as a player, but. I think if he was to be doing it as a captain as well, that would certainly put him in the mix, wouldn't it, this season?
Absolutely.
And he's got the Euros in the summer as well.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Nice one to Neil for coming in as ever. That show goes out every Tuesday. It's an absolute belter. And to round things off, of course, it's the Final Word show. Yes, we're back to doing Friday Final Words with Liverpool in Europa League action. We do a Final Word after every single Liverpool game in a season. So we've done loads already. There's plenty more to come. But yeah, check out a clip from this Final Word, which was, of course, after Liverpool's game in Prague against Sparta in the Europa League. I want to speak about Darwin Nunes now. I'm trying to think. It feels at the moment, Chris said yesterday on one of the shows, Jay, I don't mean to repeat too much, like, he's becoming Liverpool's main man. And listen, Mo Salah's coming back, so that might change. But it does feel like the Darwin Nunes show a little bit at the moment, before and after the injury. His form in terms of goals and assists has been fantastic recently. His two goals are brilliant. Like I say, I think the goal, he should do better with the first one, if truth be told, but it's a bit reminiscent of the Bournemouth goal. And then the second goal is unbelievable, just instincts as well. That guy looks like he is absolutely brimming full of confidence, and this is what we're getting out of him now, just constant impact and goals and assists and everything. He was brilliant, and two really, really good finishes that'll do him the world a good going into Sunday.
Absolutely, and that's the player we saw at Benfica, you know, when he played against us twice in the Champions League, and the things that we watched about him, that's the player and that's the finisher that he is. And seeing him just having the balls just to go, do you know what, I'm going to make this from 30 yards and see what happens. You know, I love that in a footballer. I love that in Mo, when Mo first arrived, he was doing that a lot. And Mo sort of, he's not dropped off from doing the spectacular, really, hasn't. Mo's a bit more, I'm going to beat the next two players and then put it in type thing. Whereas we've cried out for years, haven't we? If someone just hit it from outside the box, and Szoboszlai does it, and, you know, Darwin's doing it now. But I just love the way he does it, and he's just, his arrogance just to try it. And don't get me wrong, the keeper probably should have done a little bit better in the and the way the football moved, but yeah, what a goal. And again, you look at the second one and the way it dropped, I think everyone was just screaming, hit it now, because you've seen it so many times with a footballer, especially Torres. Torres did this really, really well, where it bounced a couple of times on the half volley and just go, ping that now, and there's no stopping it. And I can't pick between the two which one I preferred.
I think the second one for me is more, because I think the goalie should save the first one, but it's 8 goals and 3 assists in 10 games now here, and he's obviously he's had the injury break in the middle of it. It feels like Chris's point, Darwin's becoming the man. Like, he is constantly, you know, I'm looking at, I've got the stats here, 2 assists for Fulham, 2 goals for Bournemouth. He's had the goal against Norwich, the assist against Chelsea, Burnley, Brentford, Forest, 2 against Prague. Like, he is constantly impacting games, and yesterday they just couldn't handle him.
Listen, even when he wasn't getting the numbers, Liverpool were a different team when he wasn't playing. They were a bit blunter when he wasn't on the pitch. It's just some now that he's starting to hit the numbers now, so people are starting to notice. But I was debating for a long time on social media with a lot of people, that people were telling me Nunes wasn't good enough because he wasn't hitting the numbers and stuff like that. He was good enough. He just needed a little bit more rounding. He needed to have a bit more confidence in himself. I mean, that second goal yesterday, he could have hit that shots too early and hit the defender. He took his time with that, and he was so composed to hit that ball when he did yesterday, which was very different from the Nunes from 3-4 months ago, where he would have hit it too early, you know. Or maybe his looks changed 3 months ago, that shot hits the post and comes back out, and he gets a similar chance to what happened to the guy in Prague where he trips over himself. It's just everything's going right for Nunes at the moment, but he's always been very, very good. He's always brought something to the table. It's just his looks changed a little bit and his composure's changed a little bit.
Yeah. Composure's the key, I think, Dave. I think you're right. And like I say, he got wrapped in cotton wool head of the weekend as well, which, rightly so. After half time, then obviously Liverpool make the substitution, Gomez for Bradley. As first kicks of a game go, Jay. How many people in the history of the world of football have scored their own goal with the first kick of a game?
I know.
There can't be many.
There can't. I'm sure Michael Reid will find one and put out a stat, won't he? So that's one for you, really. I've felt so sorry for him, considering what's gone on. But again, it's not like it happened in a so-called bigger game. No disrespect to Sparta Prague, but you know, it didn't happen against another side that in the league or whatever and have a big effect. So, but yeah, I don't think it'll bother him that much, really, don't, given what the scoreline was at the time and the way he's got his head screwed on. But yeah, it's some record. The only time I can think where a player has made that big of an impact was Lars Ricken in the Champions League final. He came on for Dortmund, they were 2-0 up. You can see it in the TV. He ran on the pitch at half time. The ball gets just after half time. Ball gets played through and he lobs the keeper from 35 yards and makes it 3-0 in Champions League final. Like, and he's etched in history for that, Lars Ricken. And that's what it reminded me of straight away, but I've never seen that before.
Yeah, it was absolutely mad.
I thought it was offside. I thought offside had been given and he just cracked it into the goal because he thought it was offside.
I think everyone did. And actually, the line showed, and Evie was playing him on. Yeah, that was an interesting few minutes, because then Konate goes off and I'm thinking, hang on a minute. And then obviously,
I've never known so much shit to happen in 5 minutes of footy.
Yeah, and then.
And goals and so.
And then they have another little issue, don't they? I think they have another chance. Yeah, it was when Kelleher makes another good save, just second really after the own goal. It's like, wow, it's all going off.
Great
here.
Game.
Yeah, it's all they come back into it there. What helps, of course, then is just a few minutes later, Luis Diaz gets his goal. Gets a little bit of luck with it, of course, but another one again. Confidence-wise, Luis Diaz, he really has helped Liverpool recently in that everyone's been knackered, everyone's been injured, and he's been asked to do a lot of work, and he's done it admirably, really, and just rewards is getting a bit of good fortune. But again, going into the weekend, I'm guessing he starts, it'll do his confidence the world of good.
Yeah, and he was another one at the cup final. Like, any other game, he'd have come off like 20 minutes earlier in the cup final. He was like pro running, he was going, he was done in, but he keeps running and running. He's one of like a core group of players at the moment. There's Diaz, Harvey Elliott, Virgil van Dijk. They just all seem to be there all the time and never seem to be getting the rest, and he just seems to be going and going and going. I don't think at times Luis Diaz has had the luck he deserves over the last few games, so to get that deflected goal, it was nice to see him get a bit of luck and get ready for Sunday and a bit of confidence for him for Sunday.
Absolutely, yeah. Liverpool, he deserves it.
Sometimes, he does, mate.
I think he's another one, Jay, who sometimes has a little bit of hard lines. I thought this was Cody Gakpo. We talk about him now, actually. Like, there's been a lot of, like, what's wrong with Gakpo? What's wrong with Gakpo? And I was like, they've played a lot. Yeah, like, they've been asked to do a lot. And I, like, Gakpo is the only one actually who the goalkeeper decided to save shots from. he was throwing loads in, but Gakpo has a couple of good efforts. You know, Szoboszlai has one later on. But like, for the most part, if like Gakpo, you know, the one where he, even the first half when he gets a spin right and shoots, and it goes, and the goalie makes a good save, it just wasn't quite happening. But I feel a little bit for Gakpo and Diaz in the fact that they have been asked to do a lot of work with Jota, Nunes, and Salah out. It's been those two and Harvey Elliott who have really had to do a lot of graft and stuff. And I wonder if we are seeing effects, but that's to be expected, I suppose.
Listen, mate, when you're playing in a football side like this, you've got to step up, and they have done. And we wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for those three stepping in. And like you said before, he played 120 minutes in the cup final, and it's a testament again to the spirit of the squad and how they are. And now that, you know, the Darwin's coming back and Mo's coming back, one of them's going to have to sit out. And it is a bit of a shame. On the flip side, I'm glad of the rest, boys. I'm happy. But yeah, it's again, we've got four of that five back now where you just think, right, I was always happy whoever started out of those three. That front three, whoever it was always happy. And again, I'll be fine whoever starts on Sunday and the coming weeks. But yeah, a testament to all of them for doing what they've done the last couple of weeks.
Right, then that's that, and that is the end of the Red Men Weekly Show. Like I said, redmenplus.com, use that Nunes code, sign up, get it for 99p if you want to check out all the amazing content we've got over there. Liverpool, of course, are on a march towards hopefully more glory this season after already getting one trophy in the bag, of course. Come and join us every single step of the way over on Red Men Plus. You guys help us do this. It's fantastic. We really appreciate the support. So yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week with another Red Men Weekly. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.